Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
With both the Eagles and Bills losing their second in a row in Week 6, we have to pull out a historical stat. Since the Bills are on a bye, let's focus this one on the Eagles. Did you know that only 3 of the 16 defending Super Bowl champions that have lost 3 or more consecutive games went on to even make the playoffs that season? The 1976 Steelers, the 1984 Raiders, and the 2000 Rams were the only teams to do it. Is it a must-win for the Eagles? Well, I'm sure their fans think so. This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and it's time to go through every game, all 12 of the Week 7 NFL Sunday slate. Before we get to this week's London game, I have to apologize for last week. I got to London and I felt awful. I could not do anything, and I apologize sincerely. That doesn't usually happen to me. So therefore, that's why I missed doing the Monday night breakdowns and the Thursday night breakdown, because I felt miserable. I'm so sorry. That usually doesn't happen, but it did. And I'm going to do everything I can. I'm eating lots more vitamins, everything I need to do. But honestly, I could not do it. And I sincerely apologize. Thank you for the grace for that. We're back. We're ready to roll. I think this means we're going to have even better kind of, we'll be more with it going forward. But thank you for the grace. And let's do some accounting of last week before we fully move on. Last week, I went 11-4 straight up, 7-8 against the spread, and 9-6 on totals. That brings my season to 58.1% straight up, 50% against the spread, and 59.1 on totals. This week's London game is at Wembley Stadium, which is the second biggest venue in Europe. It has a 90,000 person capacity. I didn't know that it was the second biggest. Pretty cool. The Rams and the Jags square off. It's a battle of 2-4-2 teams. This is Jacksonville's 14th international game, the most by any team. No one else has more than 8 international appearances. They're 7-6 all time. All have been played in London. This is the Rams' 5th game abroad, and they are 2-2 all time. The Rams are favored by 3 points. The total is 44.5. And my model picks the Jags to upset, 22-21. We likely won't see Puka Nacua in this one, who of course ranks number 2 in receiving yards this season. And on the other side, the Jags are missing Devin Lloyd, who is the league's interception leader. Now, what stands out on the Rams' offensive side of the ball? There is a specific situation where Matthew Stafford thrives. Well, he has 1,181 passing yards against zone coverage this season. That's 3rd most in the NFL. He averages 8.1 yards per attempt, which is 11th most. Specifically downfield, so those 10-plus air yard passes, he's completed 29 of those, the 3rd most in the NFL. The problem, he's thrown 38 of his 98 completions against zone coverage overall to Puka Nacua, who again is unlikely to play. He's thrown just 4 of his 12 touchdown passes and both of his interceptions when targeting everyone else this season. Now, what about the Jags' defense in this matchup? They've played zone on 82% of their snaps this season. That is the 7th highest rate in the league. And they have intercepted a league-high 9 passes when doing so, while allowing 4 touchdowns and a 63% completion percentage, which is 5th lowest. Flipping it to the other side, Jacksonville's offense has been all about the run this season. Travis Etienne had a season-low 27 rushing yards against the Seahawks last week, but still has 470 rushing yards overall, ranking 6th in the NFL, and a 5.3 yards per carry average, which is 4th among running backs. So let's look a little bit deeper into this. Jacksonville is averaging 2.3 rushing yards over expected per carry against stacked boxes this season. That's 3rd best in the NFL. Stacked boxes, of course, when you're going to try to stop the run. They're 3.6 yards before contact per carry against stacked boxes. That is 2nd best. So how are they doing it? They're getting the running back with a head of steam before he even enters contact. And the Rams defense, well, they're stacking the box at the 13th highest rate, 24% of the time. They've also allowed a 54% rushing success rate with a stacked box, the 3rd highest, and a 0.17 EPA per rush with a stacked box, the 4th most. The most likely key to this one, pressure and turnovers. Let's start with who wins up front. The Jaguars allowed 7 sacks and a 50 quarterback pressure percentage in week 6. Those were both season highs to the Seahawks. Now they've allowed 10 sacks since week 5. That's second most in the NFL after allowing just 3 total sacks in weeks 1 through 4. The Rams defense, they've generated 19 sacks. That's tied for fourth most, along with a 39.7, so almost 40% pressure rate, seventh highest in the NFL. One pivotal matchup here is edge rusher Jared Verse versus Walker Little, who's had some up and down moments. It has been tough sledding on Trevor Lawrence in the passing game overall. His passer rating when targeting Travis Hunter, 55.4, and Brian Thomas Jr., 71, both of those rank bottom 5 in the NFL. Flipping it over to the other side, the Jags defensive front has only generated the 8th lowest pressure rate, so they're not getting after the quarterback a ton. However, they have the 6th lowest completion percentage allowed at 62%, along with 10 picks. And for the Rams, it does not get easier to pass without Puka Nacua, who accounts for 37% of their yards. That's the 5th most by any player in the league. Stafford has a 47.3 completion percentage when targeting Davante Adams. That's 2nd worst in the NFL, along with 29 incompletions. That's the most by any duo. This leads to a turnover question. The Jags lead the NFL with 14 takeaways. They're averaging 2.3 takeaways per game. That's the best in Jacksonville history. The Rams have 10 takeaways as well. They're tied for 3rd in the NFL. This leads to how will turnovers impact this game? The Jags lead the NFL with 14 takeaways, averaging 2.3 per game. The Rams have 10 takeaways. That's actually tied for 3rd most in the NFL. But the Rams are one of 2 teams with 1 or more giveaway in every game this season. And their 1 or more giveaway streak in 7 straight games is the 2nd longest active streak. Bottom line, my upset of 22-21 in favor of the Jags is driven in part by Puka Nacua's absence, and in part because the Jags defense has the 5th highest rate of contacting running backs behind the line of scrimmage. It's 35%. All of this leads to increased turnover odds for the Rams, meaning Sean McVay will move from 4-7 when facing his former assistants who turn into head coaches, including in the playoffs, to 4-8. And remember, Liam Cohen was on his staff. We need to do some single window snacks for this one. 1 is not super risky, but 2 and 3 are pretty spicy. Oh, and because of Nacua not officially being ruled out, I've stayed away from any Rams passing data, even though Stafford is historically great against bottom 5 passing defenses, and of course the Jags are one of those. Number 1, Kyren Williams to rush for more than 64.5 yards. He runs for 76 in my median projections. I know I talked about the Jags contacting rushers behind the line of scrimmage at a top 5 rate, but volume drives this number over 65 yards, and especially with Nacua unlikely to play, it's logical to assume Sean McVay will use his run game wizardry to come up with some new things and wrinkles and folds that add up to more rushing yards for Williams. Number 2, Travis Hunter to have more than 35.5 receiving yards? Woo! In week 6, he played his most snaps on offense to date at 54. Now, he's 2nd on the team with 20 receptions and 197 yards. He's one of 6 receivers with 20 or more receptions and 0 receiving touchdowns yet this season. Interesting. Number 3, Brian Thomas Jr. to score a touchdown again this week. Despite what the passer rating tells you, I know it's not great when targeting Brian Thomas Jr. He did end up in the end zone last week against a very stout Seattle defense. The Rams are good against downfield passes, allowing 3 touchdowns with 4 picks on the season. There is risk, but there's also upside. Let's break the games down this week in order of forecast to be most lopsided to forecast to be least lopsided and see where we fall along the spectrum. Got it? All right, sounds good. Which means we're starting in Kansas City. When Las Vegas comes to town, the Chiefs are favored by 11.5 points and the total is 45.5. I have a 13-point win for Kansas City, 28-15, so fewer points than expected, just 43 in my model. My note for the Raiders offense versus the Chiefs defense is strength on strength, as in Geno Smith has primarily thrown short passes. 49% of his passing attempts have been between 0 and 9 air yards. That's the 11th highest rate in the league. On them, he's gained 31.1 EPA, the 2nd most, and 0.34 EPA per dropback, that's the 6th most. His 7.3 yards gained per such attempt is the 5th most. But the Chiefs' defense, they've allowed just 6 yards per attempt on short passes, the 10th fewest. And opposing offenses have gained just 0.25 EPA on them, the 9th fewest in the league. It is worth noting that Geno Smith has 6 of his 10 interceptions when not pressured. That is the most in the NFL. One matchup in favor of Kansas City's offense against Vegas's defense is Patrick Mahomes against zone coverage, where he leads the NFL with a 58% dropback success rate and 0.3 EPA per dropback. That ranks fourth. By the way, the Raiders play zone at the second highest rate, over 86% of the time. Bottom line, I have a 13-point win for the Chiefs, 28-15. It was 12 points, but Rashee Rice is back. He hasn't played since week 4 of 2024, and that pushed it up a point. The Chiefs offense had double-digit explosive plays, 15-plus passes, 10-plus rushes, for the second consecutive game after not reaching that mark once in 20 games prior to that, last week against the Lions. We saw a lot more heavy personnel, and Detroit was held to their lowest pressure rate. It was like 18%. That will help keep Max Crosby from wrecking the game. He's the only player in the league with at least 5 tackles for loss and at least 5 passes defensed. One to watch in this one, Ashton Jeanty, to have more than 75.5 scrimmage yards. He has 34 forced missed tackles. That's second most in the league. And 193 yards after forcing missed tackles. That's third. He also has 13 rushes of 10 plus. That ranks fourth most in the league. And the Chiefs adjusted well to the Lions' rushing attack in the second half. But there are ways to target this run defense, and the Raiders will likely need to rely on their rookie to help prevent turnovers. The Raiders beat the Titans last week, who then fired their coach, and now have to host their former coach, Mike Vrabel, and his new team, the Patriots, who seem to be hitting a really nice stride. It is in Tennessee, but the Patriots are favored by 7 points, and the total in this one is 42. My model says an 8-point win in favor of New England, 24-16. Fun fact, since 1970, head coaches are 219, 185, and 1, so they've won 54.2% of the time against teams.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
That they used to be the head coach of. And of course, the Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel was the Titans head coach for 6 seasons from 2018 to 2023. Pressure, or no pressure, I guess, is a key for the Patriots offense against the Titans defense. The Pats have allowed a 39.5 pressure rate on their quarterback this season. That's the 4th highest in the league. With no pressure, Drake May's EPA per dropback, 0.43, 5th most in the NFL. He also has the 8th highest dropback success rate without pressure in his face. It's 58.3%. Now, are the Titans pressuring? Well, they're blitzing at the 3rd lowest rate, just 18%. And they have just a 29% pressure rate, the 6th lowest in the league. However, look out for Jeffrey Simmons. He has generated 23 pressures and 4.5 sacks this season, which is tied for Byron Murphy for the most sacks among defensive tackles. He also has 33% of his team pressures and 50% of his team sacks. He has 13 quick pressures, which are the most at the position. Flipping over to Tennessee's offense against New England's defense, well, Tony Pollard has 320 rushing yards after contact this season. That's 9th most among running backs. He averages 3.5 yards after contact per carry. The league averages 3.3, so he's above that. And the Patriots defense, they've limited opposing rushers to just 2.4 yards after contact per carry. That is the 3rd lowest mark in the league, so it's going to be tough conditions to run in. New England also has 32 run stuffs. They have a 25.2 run stuff rate, 2nd highest in the league. And linebacker Robert Spillane has 6 stuffs and 31 run tackles. He's a 25% run tackle rate. That is 2nd best among all linebackers league-wide. Bottom line, I have an 8-point win, 24-16 for the Patriots, despite them being the only team without a player to have more than 160 rushing yards. The explosive passes, though, they are working well. Drake May leads the NFL with a 157.9 passer rating. Those are 20-plus air yarders. And he is 10 of 13 for 312 and 3 touchdowns with no interceptions. His 77% completion percentage tops the league as well. And Tennessee's defense, they're allowing the 4th highest completion percentage on deep passes at 50%. One to watch here, both teams to score at least 15 points. A new coach bump for the Titans, plus Vrabel's return, more points than 15 each. One of the biggest connections I could find between the Pats at the Titans and this next game is that both of them have a touchdown differential predicted. Okay, moving on to the next game. It is Giants at Broncos. Denver is favored at home by 7 points. The total in this one is 40. I have Denver winning 25-17, so a higher scoring and more convincing win for the Broncos. On the Giants offensive side of the ball against the Broncos defense, this one's all about pressure, of course, because Jackson Dart has actually only faced pressure on 32% of his dropbacks, the 12th lowest rate in the league. But his negative 0.72 EPA per pressure dropback, that is third fewest in the NFL behind only Joe Flacco and Jake Browning. His 23.5 dropback success rate against pressure this season, that is fourth lowest. And Denver, of course, they lead the NFL with 30 sacks and a 46.1 quarterback pressure rate. And Nick Benito, we need to talk about him because his 26.2 quarterback pressure percentage, he's a marathoner for that. It's the highest in the Next Gen Stats era. He leads the NFL with 8 sacks and 34 pressures. So what's the story with Denver's offense against New York's defense? Stop if you've heard this one somewhere before. We'll get to it in 1 second. All right. Bo Nix has 0 touchdowns and 3 interceptions on extended plays, so ones where he's taken 4 or more seconds to throw. That's the most interceptions in the league so far on those extended plays. He has 9 touchdowns with 1 interception with a time to throw of under 4 seconds. Now, under pressure, what happens? 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. With no pressure, 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. What's the solution? Here's the thing where, stop me if you've heard it before. Screen passes! Yeah. Bo Nix has passed behind the line of scrimmage on 26% of his attempts. That's fifth highest. He has 53 such attempts. He's generated the second most yards, 246, of any quarterback when targeting behind the line of scrimmage. This doesn't seem surprising, but how did the Giants fare against it? Well, they've allowed the 13th most passing yards, 165, from behind the line of scrimmage this season. Bottom line, I have an 8-point win for the Broncos, 25-17. I love the Giants rookie running back, Cam Scataboo. I call him a meathead. I feel like it fits. He has 24% of the Giants' scrimmage yards. That's the second highest share by any Giants rookie since Saquon Barkley, of course. Anyways, he's forced 23 missed tackles. That's tied for 8th most in the league. And there is an opportunity to run against Denver. But the problem is there aren't enough options in the pass catching game for the Giants or enough diversity of options in general for the offense to overcome just how good this Denver defense is. Jackson Dart has a 48.6 passer rating under pressure, which is 5th lowest. And I looked it up. Denver's defense ranks 3rd best or 3rd lowest in terms of passer rating allowed on quick passes as well. One to watch here, Jackson Dart to rush for fewer than 43.5 yards. Dart is 3rd in the NFL with 113 yards on scrambles since becoming the starter in week 4, but the Broncos have allowed just 34 rushing yards on scrambles this season, period, full stop. That's 3rd fewest in the league. The last of about a touchdown difference games is Green Bay at Arizona. The Packers are favored by 6.5 points. The total is 44.5. I have Green Bay winning this one by 5, 25-20. Let's look at the Packers' offense against the Cardinals' defense, specifically in the passing game. Jordan Love is 25 of 45 on downfield passes. He has 581 yards and 4 touchdowns with the 5th highest passer rating on them, 130.1. And remember, those are 10-plus air yard attempts. The Cardinals' defense has allowed the 5th lowest passer rating in the NFL, 64.5, on such throws. Now, let's look at Jordan Love against no blitz. You'll see why here in a second. Well, Jordan Love is averaging 8.4 yards per passing attempt without being blitzed this season. That's the 3rd most in the league. He has a 0.25 EPA per dropback without the blitz. That's 4th most in the league. And why am I calling out this no blitz scenario? Well, the Cardinals blitz at the 8th lowest rate, just 23% of the time, and they have allowed a 0.10 EPA per dropback without blitzing. That's 7th most generous in the league. They've also allowed a 50% dropback success rate. That is 9th most generous. My note on Arizona's offense is to say things run differently with Jacoby Brissett versus Kyler Murray. One way to look at this is last week in a losing effort, they had their season high in terms of total yards, so 400, and they matched their season high in points at 27. Now, if you look at weeks 1 through 5, they're averaging 20.6 points per game and 288 total yards per game. That was with Kyler Murray. So the whole point is things operate differently. However, it's going to be tough sledding for whomever is under center because Green Bay's defense has allowed 18 or fewer points in 4 of their 5 games, which is tied for the most such games in the league. And they did just come off their week 6 bye. Bottom line, my 25-20 in favor of Green Bay is with Jacoby Brissett under center. That is a better margin than with Kyler Murray by about 0.4 points. One to watch here, Josh Jacobs to score a touchdown. Okay, fine, also rush for more than 72.5 yards. I love this red area note, though. Jacobs leads all running backs in rushing yards with 119, rushing touchdowns with 18, missed tackles forced with 19, and rushing yards over expected, again, 18 on carries within the 10-yard line since the start of last season. So I say touchdown and do both of them, touchdown and yards. Confidence rankings time. We hit my top four already, which makes sense given how we're ordering the games this week. But if you pick against the spread and you want to see my rankings in that scenario, you can download that from the numbers game site, numbersga.me. Basically, it shows you a confidence ranking for regular, so straight up picks, against the spread picks, as well as totals. So you can see anything that you want to see. I'm a conservative modeler. The numbers won't have a lot of variance. They're not so sensitive. Some models are very sensitive, so you can get wild swings very quickly. Mine is not that sensitive. So just look at the relative differences to each other and the rankings. That's how it's going to work best for you. Moving on to where I studied analytics, Chicago, of course. Okay. My segues are terrible today. I apologize, but I thought that was kind of funny, so I'm leaving it in. Anyways, New Orleans at Chicago. The Bears are favored by 5.5 points, and the total is 47.5 points. My model says Chicago by 3, 24-21. Starting with the Saints offense and the Bears defense. The Saints offense has used motion on 70% of their plays, the fifth highest rate, but averages only 4.8 yards, sixth fewest. The Bears defense has allowed the most yards per play when offenses use motion at 7.1, and the 12th most when offenses don't use motion at 5.4. As for Chicago's offense against New Orleans' defense, on third down, Rome Odunze has the third highest target rate, it's 38%, and the third most yards per route run at 4. He also has 6 third down receptions that have gained 15 or more yards, which is tied for the most in the league, and 18% of his routes have resulted in a first down. That's the 7th highest rate. Now on third down, the Saints defense has allowed the 10th lowest completion percentage over expected, -3.5%, but the 13th highest success rate at 43%. Bottom line, I have the Bears winning by a field goal, 24-21. New Orleans keeps it closer, but a problem with short passes is what tips the scales in favor of a field goal Bears win. The Saints use short passes at the 9th highest rate in the league, over 49% of the time. They have a 50% success rate on them, the second lowest in the NFL. They're averaging 5.2 yards per short pass this season, second fewest in the NFL. Chicago has allowed 5.4 yards per short pass this season. That's the third fewest in the NFL, and they forced 3 interceptions against these short passes. That's tied for the most in the league. The one to watch here is the Saints to score fewer than 22 points. I have 21 forecast, and that is with an estimate of Grady Jarrett not playing. He could potentially play. The Bears are also getting healthier on defense overall. They have 3 consecutive games of 3 or more takeaways. The next game in our order this week of projected line drops all the way to a field goal difference. That's Miami at Cleveland, where the Browns are favored by 3 points and the total is 40.5. I have Cleveland winning this one 22-20. Fun fact, this is the first matchup of left-handed quarterbacks from Hawaii in Tua Tagovailoa and Dylan Gabriel. Okay, as for lefties, this is the first such lefty-on-lefty matchup since week 2 of 2006, it was Michael Vick and Chris Sims, and it's the 24th time this has happened overall since at least 1950. That does include the playoffs. This will be the first matchup between starting quarterbacks both from Hawaii. Therefore, it is also the first amongst lefties from Hawaii. See what I did there? On Miami's offensive side of the ball, Tua Tagovailoa has a 74.1 completion percentage and a 123 passer rating in the red zone this season. Both of those rank in the top 3 in the league. My note on Cleveland's offense is about the run game. They're averaging the 7th highest inside rush rate this season, over 50%. They are earning 0.1 EPA per inside rush. That's the 3rd most. And 0.8 rushing yards over expected per inside rush, the 5th most. And Miami's defense has allowed 1.1 rushing yard over expected per inside rush, 4th most in the league, and a 58% success rate to inside rushes, which is the highest in the NFL. They've also allowed 2.1 yards before contact per carry to inside rushes. Guess what? Also the most in the NFL. Bottom line in this one, my 2-point win for Cleveland 22-20 is a tale of two very different defenses. Cleveland's defense has allowed the 3rd fewest total yards per game, 262.3, and they've allowed under 300 passing yards in 51 straight games. That's the longest active streak in the league, which is over double the next longest active streak, which is the Eagles at 19 games. Miami's defense has allowed 400 or more total yards in each of their last three games. That is the longest such streak by Miami since 2018. They've allowed 168.5 rushing yards per game. That is the most in the NFL. And they're one of two teams to allow 120 plus rushing yards in each game. The one to watch here is Cleveland's defense to hold Tua under 222.5 passing yards. Two reasons. One, every level of the Browns defense has top end talent. And two, the Miami defense allowing rushing yards chews up clock and limits the total number of possessions. And of course, no Tyreek Hill doesn't help. Another game I forecast to be decided in large part by the run is the Panthers at the Jets. Carolina is favored by 2 and the total is 42. And guess what? My model picks the upset. Jets to get their first win, 21-20. Starting with the Panthers offense against the Jets defense, well, Bryce Young has completed 28 of his 50 passes for 291 yards, along with a league-high 8 touchdowns with 0 interceptions against man coverage. 39% of his targets have headed to Teterow McMillan, who's hauled in 11 of those targets for 167 yards, which is the second most, and one touchdown. The Jets' defense has played man on 36% of opponent dropbacks, the seventh highest rate. They have allowed 7.4 yards per pass in man coverage. That is seventh most. The story for New York's offense against Carolina's defense is about stacked boxes. The Jets have faced a loaded box on 38% of their rushing attempts, the fourth highest rate in the league. They have the second highest rushing success rate against them, though, at 56%, and they're averaging 2 rushing yards over expected when teams try to stack the box to stop them. That's the fourth most in the league. Carolina has allowed 0.19 EPA per rush when they've used a stacked box. That is the third most in the league. They've also allowed 2.1 yards before contact per rush with a stacked box, the fifth most. And they've allowed a 45% rushing success rate, the eighth highest rate. That is when they're stacking the box. Bottom line, how do the Jets get their first win 21-20? Well, let's look at the Jets offense for the answer. Now, they've allowed a pressure rate of 51.4% this season. That's the highest in the NFL by over 11 percentage points. The Panthers defense has pressured quarterbacks at the lowest rate, just 24% of the time. Those are the stats, but we need some context here. Why? Because Justin Fields is holding on to the ball for a long time. It was almost 6 seconds last week in his 9-sack outing against the Broncos. We have reached a breaking point. He had the same number of completions as he took sacks. Less pressure from Carolina will help the picture come into focus, but they must change some things and make it easier in order to succeed. Plus, also, Jermaine Johnson is back, and him setting the edge is a huge difference maker. One to watch here, Breece Hall to score a touchdown. Explosive runs have been his calling card all season. He's tied for the second most with 14. It is the most reliable part of this offense. Weekly wildcard time, our list of 5 forecast touchdown scorers that could be considered underrated, but not to us. We know about them, obviously. They aren't guys you drafted in the top rounds of your fantasy draft. They aren't among the top few touchdown scorers on the season. These are guys who have elevated end zone reaching odds this week. Some may call them sleepers. Maybe people say in fantasy that that helps no one, but not to us. They help us, obviously. Oh, and this week, extra points if you can guess the order of risk that I put these in. Number one, I'm coming back to this guy before he doesn't count. It's Panthers running back Rico Dowdle against the Jets. He was good to us last week on this list with a receiving touchdown, but he still has only 3 touchdowns all season, so he counts. In the past 2 weeks, if you're looking only at his rushes from an under center alignment, he has a league leading 256 rushing yards, which is more than twice as many as the guy with the second most, which is 127, and that's Jonathan Taylor. He did it with 30 carries, so that's an 8.5 yard per carry, which obviously also paces the league. Number two, Patriots tight end Hunter Henry against the Titans. He leads the Pats with a red zone target share of 35%, which is the highest mark among all tight ends, and it actually exceeds Rob Gronkowski's 2017 mark of 24.4. Number three, Bears running back DeAndre Swift against the Saints. He is the first Chicago player with 250 plus rushing yards and 150 plus receiving yards in his first 5 games of a season since Matt Forte did it in 2015. Number four, Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice against the Raiders in his first game back in over a year. while passing to the intermediate level of the defense worked against the Lions. Maybe deeper passes are going to be more of the formula against the Raiders. Either way, it doesn't matter. Expect Andy Reid to dial up Rice in space against Vegas' zone. Number five, running back Jacory Crosky-Merritt Bill, if you will, against the Cowboys, who've allowed the third highest explosive run rate at 18% and the second highest rushing success rate at 52% when facing designed runs out of 11 personnel this season. This is a formation where Bill averages 6.8 yards per rush, which is the second best in the NFL. Which brings us to Washington at Dallas, where the Commanders are favored by 1.5 points on the road, and the total in this one is 55 points. I think that number needs to be even higher. My model says Washington wins 29-28. Looking at the Commanders' offense against the Cowboys' defense, we know the run game is where to focus, but where specifically? Well, it's rushing out of the shotgun formation, something that Washington has done at the fifth highest rate, over 57% of the time. They've earned the fourth most EPA per shotgun rush at 0.17 and 2 yards before contact per shotgun rush. That's the third most in the league. What do the Cowboys defense do against such runs? Well, they allow the fifth most yards before contact at 1.6, and they've allowed an explosive rush on 15% of shotgun rushes this season. That is the sixth highest rate. They've also allowed 1.1 rushing yard over expected per shotgun rush this season, the fourth most in the league. Advantage, Washington. Looking at Dallas's offense against Washington's defense, well, Dak Prescott has completed a league-high 10 passes for 100 yards when facing an unblocked rusher this season. Has he done it more or less often? Well, actually, he's done it about average. He has an unblocked pressure rate of 7.4%. The league average is 7.3%, meaning he is just better against unblocked rushers than other guys. The Commanders' defense has generated 24 unblocked pressures at an 11.1 rate. Both are second highest in the league. Bottom line, I have a 1 point high scoring affair where Washington comes out on top 28-29. I do have both Terry McLaurin and CeeDee Lamb playing. So where is the edge for Washington? The Commanders defense has the fourth highest pressure rate, 36%, when sending four or fewer rushers, and the seventh highest rate, 50%, when blitzing this season. Dak has been great against pressure, but this is a very multiple pressure front. They can do a lot of different things, and that versatility provides a tiny edge. The one to watch here, does George Pickens continue his streak? He has one or more receiving touchdown in five straight games. Now, there are a couple of Dallas players with longer single season streaks. They are the Hall of Famer Terrell Owens, Dez Bryant, and my personal favorite, the Hall of Famer Michael Irvin. By the way, my model puts his touchdown odds, as in George Pickens, at 50%. I have another 1 point margin of victory in Philadelphia at Minnesota. The Eagles are favored by 1.5 points on the road. The total here is 43.5. I have the Eagles winning 24-23. Now, this score is with J.J. McCarthy playing, which is what that 1.5 point line indicates to me. For the Eagles offense and Vikings defense, the thing that stands out is all about Saquon Barkley. He has 12 or fewer carries in each of his last two games. That happened once in 2024. His 54.2 rushing yards per game after leading the league last season with 125.3 are the largest decrease in yards per game from one season to the next since 1933. That's among players who played in at least 75% of their team's games in each season. Wild. Next Gen Stats shows that Barkley led the NFL with 829 yards before contact last season. That was over 200 more than the next closest player. He has 61 such yards this season, which is tied for 37th. He had 1,176 yards after contact last season, which ranked second. He has 264 of them right now, which ranks 19th. Is it vanilla play calling? Is it a bad O-line? I don't really buy the bad O-line concept there. The Vikings defense is allowing 132.2 rushing yards per game this season, which is the ninth most in the league. And they've allowed three players to have more than 95 yards this season, which is tied for the most in the league. Kevin Petullo also said he wanted to run more. So we will see if he's lying or if he's being serious. Switching to Minnesota's offense against Philadelphia's defense, the Vikings have negative 0.52 EPA per dropback against the blitz this season. That's the fewest in the NFL. A negative 10.6 completion percentage over expected when teams rush an extra passer. That is second lowest. They also have a 39% dropback success rate against the blitz. Third lowest. Philadelphia, their blitz rate, it's about average, 28%. They've allowed a 37% dropback success rate, the third lowest in the league, along with negative 0.24 EPA per dropback, the third fewest in the league. So blitzing is an advantage for the Eagles defense. Bottom line, I have a 24-23 win for the Eagles. This one's about blitzing too, but the other side of things, as in Minnesota blitzes on 38% of opponent dropbacks, the second highest rate in the league. And how does Hurts fare against the blitz? A 70% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns, 1 interception, and a 114.7 passer rating. By the way, those 6 touchdowns are tied for the third most. The one to watch here, Justin Jefferson. Does he score a touchdown? Well, he averaged 108 receiving yards per game in weeks 3 through 5 with Carson Wentz, after just 62.5 in weeks 1 and 2 with JJ McCarthy. We think McCarthy is back. But here's something interesting. He aligned wide on 83% of his snaps and in the slot 14% of the time. Quinyon Mitchell has played 99% of his snaps out wide and 0.9% in the slot. He has allowed a 48.6 completion percentage as the nearest defender in coverage. That's second best among all corners. The problem is he might not play. Quinyon Mitchell is on the injury report. I also believe that Kevin O'Connell will scheme to get Justin Jefferson open, perhaps more use in the slot. So I actually think that Justin Jefferson ends up in the end zone. It happens in over 52% of my simulations in my model. The Sunday game I am most intrigued by this week is the Colts at the Chargers, where LA is favored by 1.5 points at home, and the total here is 48.5 points. I have the Colts pulling off the upset in their second trip to SoFi this season by 3 points, 27-24. Starting with the Colts offense against the Chargers defense, we have maybe a theme we need to investigate. It is rushing from shotgun alignment. The Colts do it at the 9th highest rate, over 47% of the time. They average 1.1 rushing yard over expected when they do. That's the 6th most in the league. And their 12.1 explosive rush rate on shotgun runs is 9th best in the league. And the Chargers, they have allowed 1.2 rushing yard over expected per shotgun rush this season, the 3rd highest rate in the league. The Chargers have also allowed a 17% explosive rush rate against shotgun runs. That's the 3rd highest. Overall, they are missing tackles on such runs at a 27.4 rate, which is 5th highest in the league. Jonathan Taylor happens to lead the NFL with 38 forced missed tackles on runs this season. Switching over to LA's offense against Indianapolis's defense, Justin Herbert has now been pressured on 41% of his dropbacks. That's the 3rd highest rate in the league. Almost half of them, 48 of the 100, have come in under 2.5 seconds as well. He's thrown for the 8th most yards under pressure, 415, despite posting the 5th lowest completion percentage when pressured. It's 44.2%. Now, the Colts have generated a 35% pressure rate this season. It's just around average. Average is 34%, but they've allowed opposing quarterbacks to complete just 40% of their passes when under pressure. That is the 2nd lowest rate in the league. Charvarius Ward hasn't allowed more than 2 receptions or 27 receiving yards to anyone in coverage in a single game this season. Bottom line, I have the Colts winning by 3, 27-24. Next Gen Stats shows that Daniel Jones has a higher passer rating when he's pressured at 115.4 than when he's not at 99.2. I feel like there's like something cool I could say there, but I can't think of it. Anyways, but really for me, it's about Jonathan Taylor, who leads the NFL in rushing yards after contact, force missed tackles on run plays. We have talked about all this stuff before. And overall, the Chargers defense has a 27.4 missed tackle rate on run plays, the 6th highest, and they're allowing the 5th most yards after contact per carry at 3.7. The one to watch here is Justin Herbert to rush for more than 15.5 yards. I have him with 18 in my conservative model. The Colts let Bo Nix earn 20 rushing yards and Jacoby Brissett to earn 19. Now, with all of the injuries to the tackles and the running backs, I think it is very possible that Herbert could even exceed that 18 number by a lot. So I really like this one. The Sunday Nighter is in San Francisco, the home of Super Bowl 60, when the Falcons come to town. Niners are favored by 2.5 points. The total is 47.5, and I have Atlanta winning 23-21. Let's touch on both of these upper echelon running backs and then focus the rest of the analysis on the other pieces. Both are top 5 in forced missed tackle rate, but Robinson has gained 123 more yards after forcing missed tackle than McCaffrey. Robinson has 295, he ranks first. McCaffrey has 172 and is tied for 6th. Both line up in the slot at top three rates for running backs and rank one and two in receiving yards from the slot for backs. McCaffrey has 147, Robinson 116. Bijan has one tiny advantage, though, and that is that there's no Fred Warner in this matchup. So a little bit better situation for him than even just a week ago. Starting with the Falcons' offense against the Niners' defense, Michael Penix Jr. started the season going 1 of 17 for 21 yards and an interception on 15-plus air yard passes. Now, since then, over the past two games, he's gone 7 of 14 for 174 yards and still had just one interception as well. But this is where he was so good last season. He threw for the second most yards, 316 in the NFL on those 15-plus air yarders from week 16 to 18 when he took over as the Falcons' starter. This is also a good place to target the Niners' defense, as they've allowed a league-high 34% open target rate against such passes, and that has resulted in tied for the fourth most completions at 20 and the sixth most yards at 523 to those attempts. So good opportunity here for those 15-plus air yarders. Switching over to San Francisco's offense against Atlanta's defense. Now, I'm a little unclear about who the quarterback is going to be. My guess is Mac Jones. However, I'm giving you some blended numbers here against the Blitz. So San Francisco has a negative 0.36 EPA per dropback average against the Blitz. That's fourth fewest in the league. A negative 7.5 completion percentage over expected against the Blitz, sixth lowest. And Atlanta leads the NFL with a 49% Blitz rate this season, the highest in the league by 11 percentage points. Just so you know, 11 percentage points is the same gap between number 2 and number 17. By the way, the Falcons have allowed negative 0.22 EPA per dropback when blitzing, which is the fourth fewest in the NFL. Bottom line, I have Atlanta winning by 2, 23-21, and they continue to earn primetime wins. We just can't get enough of those Falcons. Now, one thing I want to pour a little out for Fred Warner, because let's look at the difference between him on and off the field since the beginning of last season. Okay. 8.1 passing yards per attempt and a 120.2 passer rating allowed when he is not there. When he's there, 6.3 passing yards per attempt, 93.7 passer rating allowed. Now, what about in the run game? 5.2 yards per carry allowed with him off the field, 4.3 when he's on the field. My point, he is a big deal and a huge loss. My one to watch here is, will Michael Penix Jr. throw a pick? My model says probably not, no. It only puts it at a 40% likelihood of happening. San Francisco's defense has exactly zero interceptions in 13 straight games. That is the longest streak since at least 1950. It's time for Good for Six. Six stats to track over the course of the day. There's a little bit of a theme in this one. See if you can figure it out. As always, they're in order of least to most risky. Number one, Falcons running back Bijan Robinson to score a touchdown against the Niners. No Fred Warner. I just talked about it. 5.2 yards per carry allowed with Warner off the field since 2024 versus 4.3 when he's been on the field. Number two, Niners running back Christian McCaffrey to score a touchdown against the Falcons. As long as Kyle Shanahan is still there, then Christian McCaffrey's touchdown odds are always going to be high. I know this Atlanta defense is much improved, but CMC is also pretty much matchup proof. Number three, Colts running back Jonathan Taylor to score a touchdown against the Chargers. Okay, that's like a one or two in terms of risk. So let's also say that he rushes for more than 89.5 yards to make the risk fit a three. Number four, Broncos back J.K. Dobbins to score a touchdown against the Giants. I feel like Dobbins could be a bit overlooked this week, but he is still tied with Breece Hall for the second most explosive rushes at 14, and the Giants defense surrenders a ton of yards to outside runs. Number five, Eagles running back Saquon Barkley to score a touchdown. Okay, are you figuring out my theme? But to realistically get this to a 5 out of 6 in terms of risk, we need to add something else in. So more than 16.5 receiving yards as well. Why? Well, motions and screens, and especially screens, are easy add-ons to this offense, which has drawn some scrutiny. And number six, my favorite one, I've been saving this one, Quinshon Judkins to both score a touchdown and rush for more than 78.5 yards. He's a great talent. This is a plus matchup. I have been saving this. I really like it. Each individually would not be risky enough to be a six, but combined together, it's some great risk. I love the upside. Again, Quinshon Judkins touchdown and rush for more than 78.5 yards. And that's it. That is the show. That is the Week 7 Sunday slate. We got through all 12 games. Let me know in the comments what you think about this show. Thank you so much for your grace and understanding about me getting sick last week. I am so sorry. I will try to not let that ever happen again. Trust me, I was not into it. I did not like it one bit. All the numbers are up on my site, numbersga.me. I would love for the show to be a little bit more interactive. So hit me up on social, put comments there, things that you'd like to have incorporated into the show. And by the way, for next week, when you're looking at the games or you have a question, maybe Twitter ahead of time, because it's confusing. You can go back on the old comments or the new ones. So Twitter or Instagram, whatever, leave a comment somewhere where I can find it. I really appreciate it. I will see you back here for the Monday Night Football doubleheader. Enjoy the football.